Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. And welcome, 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 dear listeners, wherever you find yourself, good afternoon, and welcome to your Tuesday session of The Home Run. Yes, I thought almost that it was already raining, because before I stepped into the studio, it still looked a little bit mellow, a little bit chill, obviously having cooled down a little bit, and obviously we here in the capital, you know, we're truly being blessed with all this lovely rainfall that's currently happening. I hope that wherever you find yourself, dear listener, that you are enjoying similar particular conditions, obviously with some rainfall, some lovely cool weather that ultimately just helps to take a little bit of that heat that we know that Namibia is famous for, primarily during its rainy season or primarily during its summer season. I do hope that you at least have a little bit of a respite with regards to the weather and the clouds primarily playing their part. And if you are obviously part of the contingent of the Namibian population that whose particular, you know, if you saw your AS and your OS or ordinary level, yeah, and O levels last week specifically, because you guys got first preference before the rest of the country actually had the opportunity of seeing. And I do hope that, you know, that some of you did not, you know, experience the sort of like public humiliation, specifically what we used to go through back in 2002 when the Cambridge system, you know, okay, the Cambridge system actually rolled out in earnest back in 1995 or 1994. But in 2002, you know, it was a little bit more dramatic because, you know, it was plastered all over the school. And specifically, if your juniors knew who you were, then yeah, you probably were the roast of the town. So I do hope that a lot of you probably did not go through that particular sort of like shameful experience or public shaming scenario. Secondly, that you obviously probably did, you know, do your best, and however it translated to, that it would allow you to actually apply to the universities in Namibia or wherever across the SADC region or internationally even. But if you're not part of the lucky guys who, you know, successfully achieved the results or the outcomes that you wish to achieve, do not fear and do not fret. There actually is recourse. You can actually have the opportunity of rewriting and be able to improve on those marks. Just so that you know, I mean, it's one of the particular things that during my time on high school, we were not informed of that there was an opportunity to still improve on those marks. It was more just a sense of understanding that this is knockout football 101. It's do or die. It's a Mortal Kombat. You know, it's all that. And the world will end if you just, you know, achieve a negative. In actual fact, it is not like that. The world does not revolve around the particular sort of like fear mongering that a lot of us have been exposed to in the basic education realm. And it is a place where you actually learn from your particular mistakes. Now, on that particular note, dear listeners, this is The Home Run. I'm not here to play a father in a religious context, meaning since I'm Catholic, I can't be a pastor like in other particular Christian denominations. The important thing that we are looking at for today's particular scenario and discussion is an interesting conversation. Actually, that's something that I could not, you know, pursue during the course of December, obviously. You know, you found me on other particular, sort of like time frames during the course of December. And the second scenario was obviously also that, the particular acquaintance that I know who works for, one of the civil society organizations that had something to do or played a particular role in terms of being an observer during Namibia's recently ended local and regional authority elections, which was a month and a half in that direction, back in 2025. They brought out their own particular findings report, the report based upon the findings of what had been observed and the methodology that they applied specifically in this engagement. And the particular, you know, sort of like findings that emanated from the observation exercise that took place during last year's 26 November 2025 elections. Now, you'd be asking, you know, the so what question. What is so important about this particular conversation? Well, the particular import for you specifically is also to try and understand the severity of the voter apathy, because that is one of the crux or one of the particular focal points of our discussion for today. And the second particular scenario had been, should this not be an elections that we actually need to position before the presidential elections? Just think about it. Just think about it, dear listeners, and position this particular framing. And I'm purposefully positioning this framing to you in terms of looking at it as an everyday, ordinary Namibian that has a vested interest specifically in how are we going to achieve our developmental goals, specifically the NDP6 and all those other particular sort of like, I will now call them lofty ambitions, because what we've seen since 1991, well, let me actually push a little bit back, since 1995 has been, where is the disconnect happening? And the single most important thing where the disconnect is actually happening has been at the local and regional authority level. And why do I place the blame then? I've been singing the song since 2025, where it actually, you know, smacked me against the front of my forehead. My forehead is not pretty, it's not that big, you know, it's not that big of a forehead. The key indicator that jumps up from that self-realization of why is development so slow and why is it, does it take so long specifically for the needy in the broader Namibian society to actually be catered for, to improve on the ambitions and the dreams that they might have, to improve on the lackluster service provision that they are experiencing day in, day out, to improve on the maladministrative curse that the outside of Windhoek or outside of Erongo and Commerce that the rest of the country suffers from. What kind of panado or kind of painkiller or kind of antibiotic medication exists out there to deal with these fundamental problematic scenarios that are aimed specifically at improving the everyday lives of the everyday ordinary Namibian? And it doesn't matter from which dimension of the Namibian community or the broader Namibian population you come from, whether you are the president or whether you are a newborn baby that was born yesterday or just a couple of minutes ago, you still actually have or and own this particular right to be provided the best of service provision wherever you grow up, wherever you live, and wherever you reside. I mean, the particular trip to China last year, in that particular, just right immediately after the election itself, was an eye opener, primarily because I could see what rural development and rural service provision looked like. I could see. Let me say that again. I could see. And it is not a lofty dream. It is not a lofty aspiration. It is not a predisposition, meaning a human perspective or human behavioral condition that is misaligned to reality or that is disconnected from the actual particular problems and everyday struggles that people have to experience. No. It is with concerted effort, with concerted planning and resource allocation, things can happen. Namibia and rural Namibia and small towns of Namibia and smaller urban settlements of Namibia actually can be converted into a mini Switzerland. We can be the African Switzerland without the banking secrecy. obviously, without, you know, there has to be a caveat somewhere without the banking secrecy. So, as we obviously sit here as Namibians, you know, looking at what was and what was the reaction, some of the key findings, that obviously will be explored in the discussion, that I held a little bit earlier today. You know, it was a pre-recorded interview, primarily because yes, many of the particular acquaintances and the people that we know as journalists also have lives and they also have jobs and responsibilities. So I could only find this particular time frame for the two guests that I've got lined up in our discussion for today. And you will listen to the conversation I held with the Namibia Institute for Democracy's Jacinta Kasume, who is a program manager, and Valentinia, mentor, who was a project assistant specifically. And their particular institute or, you know, organization was an observer during the 2025 local and regional elections, local and regional authority elections. And the conversation was born and focused around the voter apathy. Now, I actually want to put in context, just so that you have at the back of your mind, primarily some of the particular concerns that stem from the data or the performance parameter of how we Namibians showed up to 2025's elections. And the vast difference between what we saw in 2024 for presidential and the sort of like, you know, it's local authorities, it's regional authorities. And that primarily was the language, not the language, but more the body language, should I say, and the attitude, the behavior of everyday Namibians. It was, if it was not a Namibian above 40 or 40 and above or above 35 and above, that you saw at these polling stations, the youth technically did not show up. And it's straightforward. And the two, the two particular experts themselves, both highlighted that the youth didn't show up. So I'm going to read you some statistics just for you, just to set the bar or just to set the scene for us. So for the, I just want to make sure, for the local authority elections across the country, there were 59 local authorities that were contested for, meaning where political parties were going to compete for. And the registered tally of voters that were eligible to vote across these 59 local authorities was 752,000 Namibians. Let that sink in. Across 59 local authorities, 752,000 Namibians could vote or could cast a vote. The votes that were cast, the votes that were submitted, the people that showed up tallied to 272,942 across Namibia out of 3 million Namibians. 272,000 successfully cast their votes. The rejected votes that would have been part of the 272,000 was about 3,500. Already that should tell you that it's below 50%. Remember that. That is below 50%. 752,000 minus 272,000. That is less than 50%. For the regional council, the total tally of Namibians that could vote, and this was the larger body, this was the larger sort of like amount of Namibians that were eligible, was 1.499 million Namibians. Let me say that again. 1.499 million Namibians could vote. This is for regional councils. This is across the country for the 14 regions. Guess how much Namibians, or how many Namibians showed up? Don't worry. Don't hold your breath. Don't even try to play guessing games. It's straightforward. It's once again less than 50%. 609,000 Namibians could vote, did vote for the regional council across the country. Finally, the rejected tally of votes was about 5,900. And that's just the bare bones facts that you need to sit in your mind with when you listen to the conversation between myself and the two particular, you know, guests from the Namibia Institute for Democracy who had or who were part of the observer mission during the 2025 local and regional authority elections. Let's have a listen to this conversation here on your number one talk radio station. But first, we'll quickly take a short break. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
So we come back from the break right there, dear listeners, and as promised, we get into the particular conversation specifically based upon the findings that the Namibia Institute of Democracy had conducted during their observer mission, and primarily some of the interesting talking points and nuanced details that stemmed from the performance of elections in Namibia. And welcoming to this Tuesday's afternoon session of The Home Run, and for today's particular discussion, as you would have seen on our social media poster for today's program, we have two particular guests. The discussion, though, is pre-recorded because I don't have the luxury of hosting the guests live at this particular time. But welcoming to our discussion for today, I am joined by Madam Jacinta Kasume and by Madam Valentina Mentor from the Namibia Institute for Democracy. And both of them were participating in the recently ended local and regional authority elections as observers. We have Valentina that was responsible for deployment, and Jacinta was responsible for coordinating. And obviously, guys, thank you for joining us. It's obviously the first time, especially you, Jacinta, for joining us here. And thank you for taking the time for us to have a little bit of a talk of this New Year's post-election analysis, mm-hmm. primarily of the report that you guys released mm-hmm. after last year's elections. And thank you for taking the time to talk to the listeners as well about this particular development.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Doi. Yeah, we're pleased to be here.
100%. So, don't worry. So when we look at the particular sort of like the for us to start off or get into this discussion specifically, if we have to look at the build up pre the elections, that's now from what you guys observed as NID, you know, as political parties were trying to finish up with their own campaigning. Was there a sense of anticipation the same level? I'm asking this as a comparative question versus the 2024 elections that we obviously saw with presidential. Did you see a similar level of anticipation? Because the later part of the bulk of our discussion will be about the report. Mm-hmm. But just looking at this anticipatory period, was there a lot of hype? Was there a lot of excitement?
Mm-hmm.
And was some of the aim, obviously, of being an observer to try and compare the hype, the pre-hype mm-hmm. or the pre-campaign, the campaigning with the actual turnout scenario.
Yeah.
What did that look like for you guys? And is this, am I right in terms of asking that particular question of, you know, do observers try to see the hype meet up with the actual turnout of voters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'll just start by giving a bit of context in terms of not the work that the NID does per se, but what we did in relation to the elections. So in 2024, we deployed over 150 election observers, and we not only deployed, but we also trained them and provide them like with merchandise, with observation t-shirts, caps, and of course, like the necessary training as well as deployment stipends. And we did that in partnership with the Hans Seidel Foundation, as well as the Democracy Works Foundation. And then last year, we aimed to do sort of the exact same thing, but with a smaller cohort of observers. So we did so with, I believe, we're targeting 90 observers, and we ended around 62 observers that we ultimately deployed and trained. And we did that in partnership with the Embassy of Switzerland in South Africa, as well as the Delegation for Flanders in Southern Africa, and then the Hans Seidel Foundation. So in a nutshell, that is what we set out to do. That was our target. I think you're right to ask a question, and like a comparative question, no less, because the hype in 2024 was a lot. There was a lot of hype. And I think that is particularly because a lot of individuals feel like that is the only election that matters. I don't even think majority of like the electorate is aware of regional and local authority elections. So not only was there a lot of hype, but like there was a lot of youth participation and like voter participation. Like people were actively involved and wanted to know, okay, where do I get registered? Where do I go and vote? Where's my deployment stations? Who are the presidential candidates? And like, who exactly am I going to vote for? And they were deeply engaged, not only in person, but also on social media. There was a lot of like commentary. Last year's one was the complete opposite of that. Like genuinely, it was even a struggle to secure election observers, like even just to secure individuals that were going to observe. And not only that, but like there were no, according to our observation, there were no international observers at all. Not even SADC was present to observe these elections. So I think that is also like testament to the amount of buy-in that we have for regional and local authority elections. But in terms of like observation, even the day that I went to go and vote, I was anticipating that someone else was busy running as councillor in my constituency, a particular lady, and I was looking forward to go and vote for her, or I like I had faith that she was the candidate that I was going to go vote for. And when we came to the polling station, she wasn't there, she wasn't on the ballot. And so I think it's also like a clear indication of just miseducation or the lack of voter education at all, because not only did we not know who our candidates were, we did not know where to vote. There was a lot of this, there was confusion about like voter re-registration, and whether or not that voter's card is valid in your constituency. So there was a lot going on, and particularly marked by miseducation. But there was no, at least from what we observed, there was no hype. The voter turnout was quite low. And the individuals that did come out were a lot older. And I don't even think that they were
Was it the individuals in terms of the candidates?
Not the electorates.
The electorates.
The electorates were like, they were a lot older, and they were coming out like in twos, in threes.
Because the constituency I had was or that I stay in is Windhoek East. This one where we're recording in, and the unfortunate scenario was that the turnout was also, it came in like in trips. One family car, the hype not being similar to 2024's hype, which obviously meant new administration, new ministers, and that. Now I'm going to ask this question a little bit later, in terms of also that scenario, in terms of looking at whose response, who do we, do you feel as NID, should the voter education responsibility fall on? I have a particular view myself, but we can obviously sort of like have a little bit of a slight debate, not debate, I don't like debates. But when we look at this conversation, obviously, of the education element, now I'm going to ask it here and also at the back end, but was there really a lack of education specifically on the voter side that you guys observed during the course of last year's election day? Or was it probably the other question that's also in our discussion for today, the apathy component that literally blatantly came through? And I'm asking this primarily because of a lot of the dissatisfaction that the international observer groups observed in the 2024 presidential
Just to let you guys know, obviously we had the long lines.
Yeah.
We had the
lack of ballot papers.
The lack of ballot papers.
The voter verifiers.
The voter verifiers.
The extended time.
That too. Yeah. The small, the single or one voting elements.
Yeah.
The polling station shopping that took place, the long queues,
the lack of polling stations,
the lack of polling stations, all those particular things were contained in three observer mission reports. That's now SADC, AU, and there was another African one. The guys that had the highly publicized, you know, press conference at
At Mercure,
in 2024. And
that was AU.
No, it was all three.
Was it all three? They had it together. Yeah.
There was a third African one. I keep forgetting the name, but they also had like former diplomats and African politicians as leading that because the three of them moved together. The important one. They have it's a AE something. And the one that we obviously, that I don't know if they were here, was obviously EU one.
EU was observing.
Yeah.
Both in last year and in 2024.
So when we look at obviously the interest in terms of Namibia's political stability, Namibia's ability to select and elect every time new politicians, whether it be local or national, the particular argument that had permeated through 2025 was voter education, voter education. I saw that some journalists tried to ask the question back at the first announcement before the results in last year. The voter education, should ECN be fully responsible? Now, I'll ask it still later on. Don't worry, guys. But do we really think that the electorate was really interested in this local authority turn and this local authority elections?
Yeah, I think Val can speak on voter apathy. I'll touch on voter education because I'm more familiar with that.
Yeah.
In the office just before we came here, we were speaking about elections and like just several like activities that we'd like to roll out. And we, of course, as the NID, were speaking about voter education. And then I asked, well, is it really that the electorate is not educated on like why it's important to vote in the branches of government and all of that? Or is it that they're just so inundated by all of the socioeconomic issues that they could care less to just go out and vote? Because I'm a single mother of four and I'm a security guard and I get paid like below minimum wage and I need to feed five kids. So like how
you
could
just
you
said four, where's the first kid?
I don't know, my auntie's kid, you know? Because there's always kids and it's extended family and it's like I could really care less about who's the next candidate or counselor or president because I am, you know, I'm just so bombarded by all of these things and all of these responsibilities that I need to take care of. So I think one of the reasons why voter education doesn't necessarily like translate, and that is also like last year we did voter education, we do voter and education and civic education every year. And one of the things that we realize, especially like for the schools in Katutura that we majority of the time target, is that a lot of those kids are hungry, you know? And unless we come with food, unless we come with like active and I don't know, fun icebreakers.
But it firstly is like a food element.
It's a food element.
It's a hunger element.
You need to go with food or else they're not gonna stay, and when they do stay, they're not gonna be engaged.
Yeah.
So you do need to feed these kids. And if that is already like on a very rudimentary level, then what about adults? Like, why would they care to vote if their basic human needs are not even being, you know, addressed? So I think that's the first thing, is that, yes, we obviously need more civic and voter education, and individuals need to understand why it's important to vote. But if hunger is there, and if like everything is just marked by poverty and marginalization and people are just disenfranchised, then I do not see why they would even care to go and vote. But I also feel like the concept of democracy doesn't fully translate. And I think like 2 years back or so, the 29ers had a panel discussion and was focusing on voter apathy. And it's like this idea that democracy is a one-size-fits-all thing. And it's like, okay, how do we create a version of democracy that speaks to Africa and speaks to to the African context and African countries? And unless we do that and like we really internalize all of this Western concepts and make them our own and understand, okay, in order for democracy to work in Africa, maybe we need to address socioeconomic issues, maybe we need to address housing, whatever it may be, sanitation, all of this other like low hanging fruits.
Yeah, I'm also starting to be annoyed by that phrase because people would use the term low hanging and then we can see the massive issue to achieve the low hanging.
Yeah.
For example, the obviously being that in some cases we need the right local authority councillors to actually enact, pass a budget for the community that they represent to actually see the change that the community supposedly voted for or wants.
Mm-hmm.
One of that obviously has been the concerns coming through from, was it Rundu or Katima last year, where the minister Sankwasa went and we've got a term here at Eagle FM known as Sankwasanized, the council. But still staying on the apathy point, because you highlighted the particular voter motivation element.
Yeah.
On the apathy scenario, since you were an observer, how does that primarily also fit into what Jacinta now just highlighted?
Yeah, I think, like Jacinta said, for me to want to actually show up at the polling station, I should be motivated. Why am I there in the first place? So as a young person, for example, and I always like to give this example. If you want a vote, a young voter, for example, to show up at the polling station, take away something that actually matters to them. At this moment, I don't think, of course, not the youth unemployment can be one of them. But like, if you take away things like, let's say, we have countries that cut social media, for example, internet, that can be like a provoking factor to actually push these young people to, not that it should be done, I'm just saying, there should be a motivation. Yeah, there should be a motivation, something that actually hurts them most to want to come up with change or to want to change the status quo. And honestly, let's also maybe just look at it or generalize it that local authority, like throughout history, haven't actually had the highest voter turnout. So maybe we shouldn't break our necks around the fact that we didn't have such a high turnout. But that's also an excuse.
Because I want to share some facts from you guys, for you guys, just to put in context what your report also highlighted. They broke up the stats in terms of the voter numbers, but we all know that we literally had like something like a million, 1.6 million voters that could participate. For the regional authority, 609 out of that 1.6, which is almost 1.7 million, voted.
Okay.
So that's less than 50% already. For the was it the local authority? It was even less. We had 400 and something that could vote and participate, because obviously where you're cordoned off in the constituency, and 200 and something participated.
And isn't that sad? Because these are the elections that are about service delivery.
Exactly.
Like this is your sanitation, your local sanitation, your educate, like where your kids go
your
to school.
Your electricity.
Like all of these things.
Where you pay your rates and lights for.
All of that.
Yeah.
These are the elections that matter, and yet individuals are so not
interested.
So
maybe they are, then the question should be, why are we not interested? Maybe
and
that should be.
Because we are hungry.
It's not a matter of concern to us now.
Now, it also puts a light specifically on this particular elections, because I think you guys would have also observed some people literally took the voting day as a holiday.
Yes.
I saw so many people just chilling at home, specifically.
At the mall. The mall was
at
full.
At the mall, because the malls were full. And obviously, for the presidential elections, what I observed in 2024 was that we had the malls, which are the retail businesses, literally gave the people like half day off. They could close up shop at 1 or 2, and then the people could go home. Now, obviously, the contingent of people that work in that sector is not like the overwhelming majority that you would need to be free to go home.
Yeah.
These would be your government officials who were literally off for that day, and much of the other private sector elements. Now, there is a little bit of a weird scenario, because many people, what I also observed was that many people was like, okay, we went through presidential, why are we voting again for 2025? And who are the people we're voting for? Now, this is where the particular interest for, and not about voter education, but I'm going to ask this question now, since we're on that subject, the onus of who should take, not the fault, but more the responsibility, because the elections are there permanently. You know, we go through these cycles, 5-year cycles. Who should play a greater role in sensitizing the electorate about the local authority in the regional elections, since this is the elections that actually provide services.
Yeah.
And the second part of the question is, shouldn't these elections come before the presidential so that we can sort out technically what the needs of people are versus the political aspirations of parties, which is getting a president into the state house and a majority parliamentary representation. So those are the two questions. They're one question. Should we swap them around? And I'm just asking you to sort of like play like a wish list tonight with that swapping. And the first one being, who should actually take responsibility for voter education and voter motivation? Because the apathy is the opposite of the motivation.
Yeah, I mean, based on our voter education sessions, the obvious answer is obviously ECN. That is what we teach our students, is that the ECN is responsible not only for voter education, but like for conducting the elections, for making sure that they run smoothly, all of those principles that are tied to an election, fair, credible, transparent, all of that. So the obvious answer is the ECN. But
since they've been,
because I'm going to say,
you know, that has been the case, and there's a lot of shortcomings thereof. I mean, I would love to say civil society, but I know that civil society is severely underfunded. And so I think the responsibility or the onus is on all of us to educate ourselves. And to educate each other. But then the question is, how many of us have the privilege to even begin to educate ourselves?
And the will.
And the will, you know, even like just the mental bandwidth. Like, how many of us have finished school, have matric, have gone to university? Like, how many of us have that privilege in a country like Namibia? So obviously, you know, I am my brother's keeper, and the responsibility is on all of us to educate ourselves and to educate each other. But I do not see how that is. And I feel like that's also like a very utopic, not utopic, but like, I feel like it's very idyllic to think that that would be the case, because that is an ideal world, that the responsibility of voter education is on all of us, and we are all holding each other accountable. But right now, obviously that cannot be the case. We're going through so many issues that like really any elections is the last thing on the average Namibian's mind. They are worried about bread and butter issues. And I think what doesn't help is that a lot of these politicians or councillors or individuals that are choosing to pursue politics is that they are doing it for their own personal gain and benefits, and not because they genuinely feel like they can contribute in a meaningful manner to their communities or to the people that they claim to serve. They're just doing it because I want to be a politician and I drive a Mercedes-Benz and be like on a government salary, and it's not for the right reasons. And I think because of that, not all of them are even educated
To carry out those roles
in the first place.
So I want to sort of like bring an extra dimension to that first part of that question, being the responsibility. Because you already gave the answer already, should it not be the responsibility of the political parties then to actually take up the responsibility of voter education, since it's for their gain? It's not the electorate gaining, you know, a favorable position, because local and regional authority is all about service provision and who can win the most votes to be able to be in the pound seat to dispense said services. Should it not then fall on their responsibility, because ECN is also responsible for the same political parties?
It's another
particular dimension to look at, because if you look at who benefits, the, like you highlighted, the ideal world is for us, the electorate, to benefit, the ordinary person, man and woman. But then the only people who actually benefit financially, being they get the council seats, they get paid for all those particular, are the political parties. Shouldn't they take the responsibility for this, probably?
But then that would require us to change the whole structure of the role of ECN then. Because, and then it's a situation where we might end up with political parties weaponizing the whole.
I was going to say, like, where do you draw the line between voter education now just playing propaganda? Yes. Like,
true.
Where do you draw that line? Yeah. And I personally, I don't even agree with that entire idea of political parties. If I'm in the questions, when you like preemptively send the the questions, you said something like about the winning side, now that like the winning side has been determined. And I think that's like the thing that I hate about politics,
that it's so divisive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so competitive, and it's like, don't we all win?
Mm.
Like, if democracy works and we like elect someone that is worthy of being elected in the first place, don't we all win when we all receive the services that we are to receive, when like our education system is functional, when we have like services that are delivered on time?
Yeah.
Don't we all win? But right now we are just all pinned against each other, and it's like, oh, it's your side that is messing up. And
so then if the responsibility of EC, and then that can ease the tension.
Okay.
So just, you know, put the drop of neutrality.
But still, there's an element that is benefiting.
Yeah.
It's not ECN benefiting, it's not the voters benefiting, it's the political parties.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the biggest concerns of sort of like, because I'm also giving you now a little bit of, you know, two scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
For example, here in the Ventu Council, we saw slow traction. You guys remember since 2020, the COVID year, into heading into this direction after that, elections ended, you know, we had these coalition political parties, and there was slow traction in new ideas, new economic ideas to advance, you know, things and development in the outskirts of Windhoek, and also to bring the services to many needed sites.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we had the highly publicized, what was it, the debt collection activities of 2021, 2022. And then here from 2023, 2024, we start seeing, like, you know, as the seat of mayor is rotating, you now start seeing how the party politics is literally playing out. You get, I bring in another constituency, another local authority here, 90 kilometers, Riebos. Sometimes I ask people who still live there, like family members or people that I know, how's the service delivery for you guys there? Just on a basic level, you know, as a consumer, as a user of the service. They would highlight, oh, this is not being supplied.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Once in a year, the town gets completely cut off, even though you pay your water and electricity bill. So you ask questions about, you know, what is the level of, what they call that, administration, for example. Now, at the helm of that, you have the same entity that takes, that has to take responsibility. Who are these counselors, and actually what do they do? Because remember, they get paid
And they go through training,
and they go through training, and they obviously are the ones that campaign for said votes for them to enjoy or to reach that particular status. So that's where I keep emphasizing on this question: shouldn't it be the political parties then that have to play a greater role? Even though, you know, you might not like the competitive element associated to it, but shouldn't they play a greater role in ensuring that the people they are campaigning for turns up in numbers, even though they might win a landslide vote? Sure. You know, there's always that particular anomaly. But shouldn't they take the major responsibility for this? Because if we still put this at the ECN, from what I could look at the body language of the ECN commissioners, that at the end of the Wednesday night, is like, they didn't know how to actually address. The question was asked, how much was spent on voter education? I think it was like in the 20s or the 10 million. It was a 10 million or slightly higher. And it still doesn't answer the question of what you guys answered a little bit earlier. You know, how do you translate the training, the education into boots on the ground?
Yeah, tangible change.
Tangible change, seeing the voters show up. Because if you see 50-year-olds, 45-year-olds, 65-year-olds, 75-year-olds show up, one by one, two by two, that means there's only a specific element of the population that understands the value of this election. Yeah.
And that's also just because it has been engraved in them. Those are people that are coming like from apartheid and colonialism and like all of those.
And they understand the value of voting because they know they're making change. So still, once again, just that two-part point. Shouldn't it still be the parties that have to play a greater role, and the associations now, because there were so many of them?
Yeah.
And then secondly, also looking at the way forward, because people keep asking about technology, and we went back to this paper-based system again. So just your insights on what you guys look at that responsibility component.
Yeah, for responsibility, I really still do not think it should be political parties. And I will give the example of the 2024 elections. A lot of political parties had a lot of money, and a lot of them were trying to incentivize voters, you know.
Okay, so it was almost on the verge of being like buying votes.
It felt like they were buying votes. But that's the thing. Like, I think the youth is so we are going through so much and we are so troubled.
Take that opportunity. That
if I'm going to send Yoma Stadium for a Coke and a Brechen, I'm going to do that, you know?
And a T-shirt and a cap.
A T-shirt. That's what I'm going to do. If I'm going to go watch X perform, then I'm going to do that because I am so tired and it's hot and we're probably cooking with fire back home and there's nothing there. So let me just go and watch. And if this political party wants me to vote for them, I will vote because, you know, I attended their rally. But I just feel like at this point, people are just buying votes because everyone is so, I feel, what is it? Shock and awe.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like everyone is just so, we're just zombies. And we are just so troubled by all of these bills and responsibilities.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, give me a question and I will go and vote.
They know because then they know which part of you they
And usually they just go there to Katutura. Yeah. They go there to the individuals that are marginalized and disenfranchised and they have big rallies there. And they know that people are just going to show up for food. Yeah. And the moment you feed them, they're going to go to the polls and that part, the party colors or that party, I don't know, insignia is going to resonate with them because you fed them and then they're going to vote. So I don't trust that responsibility should be on political parties. But then if it's going to be on the ECN, I think we need a lot of reform in the ECN. They genuinely need to like understand what it is their mandate is and like how do we carry that out. And I mean, of course, the organizations like the NID and civil society, they're always happy to assist, you know, the ECN and to collaborate with them. And like, we've been strong collaborators of the ECN for such a long time. But clearly, we need an intervention and something needs to work because it has not been working. And you were saying something about like the electoral cycle, but a lot of people don't even know that it's a cycle.
That's the biggest concern. Because remember on the education point of things, you sometimes can see how people feel disconnected. Even if you look at, for example, there was the hype of 2024 that I asked at the start. And then in 2025, people were asking the question, we've got another election? Because even here at Radio, at Eagle FM, we highlighted it for the whole of last year as a sensitizing to let people know, listen, there's another elections coming and there's going to be pertinent questions. But in many scenarios, the campaigning was a big issue, meaning I didn't see any campaigning on this side of Antuk.
But in Katutura,
it wasn't that much.
It was just posters. There were a lot of posters in Katutura.
So even from when you guys were also observers before the observation period, the campaigning was also
very weak.
In comparison.
And because even in 2020, during that COVID year, people were literally campaigning, but predominantly they had their little rallies. There was obviously the very famous one of the situation that happened in Okahangia. I won't mention names because of, you know, some sort of language that was used, the competitive element. But the particular hype also led to who the candidates were. Now, I'll highlight this once again because it's an observation that I saw. For my constituency, because I was limited to it, where I can vote. And even as a journalist, I could only move there versus the movement I could enjoy during the presidential. Was I saw there were only three candidates out of the massive menu of associations and parties that were supposedly registered. That obviously meant that certain voters were automatically also just locked out of options. Like you also saw with your Bantuk West.
She wasn't even on the ballot. But she was actively campaigning as a candidate for my constituency, which is Bantuk West.
So when you look at scenarios like that as well, this obviously means that there's also a huge education element with the parties, right? Can we agree that there's also an education element there?
Miseducation
with the parties,
and lack of education.
Because I was going to be on the lack of on the lack side. So highlighting from that, have you guys also dealt with the political parties in terms of education, engagements, seminars, and those formats?
We previously used to even before my time at the NID, we had political party workshops, where we'd bring all the political parties together, and like teach them, not even teach them, but just capacitate them on areas that they identify. Because that's always our approach, like the target group knows best as to what they want to be addressed or to be workshopped on. So we have worked with political parties in the past, but right now there isn't much like donors and like partners are not necessarily into,
or they're not eager.
They're not eager to work with a workshop political party. So it's more so like workshopping the ECN on recommendations, or workshopping councillors, the councillors that are sworn in.
Versus a pre-elections kind of. Okay.
So that is more, it's more post-elections now.
Was it probably based upon a scenario that in the event that if specifically, let's say party A or party B, they are not successful on their campaigning or in their elections run, that they would throw fault at you guys? Was that some of the concerns, or was it just something else completely?
I really would not know, because that was before our time.
Yeah.
But I know that we did work and like workshop political parties, but that is no longer the case. So it's more like post-elections, election recommendations, and like how do you, I don't know, like address those recommendations and how do we ultimately implement them?
Now we've basically sort of like covered most of the particular questions I've asked.
We didn't address which elections can we maybe have
swap?
That particular question. So starting with you, Valentina.
We can maybe, like, we identified the few reasons that maybe the voter turnout was low because of, first of all, the lack of campaigning from the political parties. Then the lack of voter education, of course. And then the last, which I think is important, is the type of elections also. But then, has it been done before where...
No, it's a hypothetical. Yeah, it's a hypothetical sense, because if we have to look at needs, if you, you take the needs of everyday people, what they need, you measure it up to the election cycle. Because in essence, a ministry can only go so far, meaning if you vote for a party and a president versus the actual influence and the actual impact that a local authority has, meaning the people who live there are dependent upon the services that that local authority brings.
Provides.
And we've obviously got this Decentralization Act that I only discovered last year that Namibia has since 2000.
I didn't even know we had a Decentralization
Act. It's now 25 years old now, 2026. It was voted, it was gazetted in 2000. This Decentralization Act speaks towards how, you know, decentralization of development is not just centralized in Windhoek, meaning it's not the ultimate decision of a ministry or a minister here to make decisions for the regions. The regions with their regional authorities then implement things where they are. So when I ask that question, it's on the mindset of looking at, we've got this piece of legislation that has been just dormant. It's been sleeping. And if we look at this aspect, there's only so far a president, a minister, a prime minister, and ministries can go to effecting change for people on the ground versus local authorities. Because that local councillor would have more importance than the minister, and his executive director, and so forth.
And hopefully more knowledge, because you're on the ground. Hopefully that would be the case. Ideally,
that should be the case. So if on that particular context that I now supplied, do you still believe, you know, it would be feasible or not? Because I'm asking this in a hypothetical scenario, based on all that knowledge that we've got.
I think it will be. Because provided that we have the same momentum and understanding of the crucial aspect of the local and regional authority elections. Because then if it's a thing of, we can have, okay, the idea is good, but like, do people still understand the whole importance of it? Or do they still want, it's still a situation, even if you have the local elections first, the presidential might still have higher momentum compared to...
And obviously, there was great appeal by, you know, or great appeal into the idea of a first female president for Namibia versus, you know, just having a bunch of male candidates obviously on the ballot. So, in one sense, I'm not completely saying that people bought into the idea, even though the numbers speak for themselves, the stats, how people turned out. But we obviously had certain shortfalls with the response to the elections of 2024. Which we highlighted a little bit earlier, the shopping for polling stations, the lack of polling stations, and the machinery and so on. The biggest concern obviously was here, where and how will people vote? Because there were a lot of provisions made for people who find themselves outside somewhere or who could not wait so long versus participating in the actual thing that gives them the service. You need water, you need electricity. So that council has to speak to NamPower, ECB, the Norits, the Senorits, so on and so forth. The biggest concern here is obviously that we have the 50-50 balance of Namibians, urban versus rural. And the potential would be that we will probably see more urban migration in the near future because the, the 2023 census says it. Based on that as well, would it also be a prudent idea to run to firstly think about in terms of also trying to get to swap the two election cycles with each other? So that we don't, so we know if new towns are going to be probably made because of urban migration, that concerns first have to be met about on the ground versus the national identity or the national policy making direction that we wish to take with a new president.
Yeah, I think we should swap them in like an ideal world.
Yeah.
I would love us to like swap them because I it cannot be a top to bottom approach. It needs to be a bottom to top approach. If not, they will eat the rich. And so I genuinely think that like the election that we should be focusing on is regional and local authority elections, because this is the one that that election is the one that genuinely it matters. You know, that's the grassroots election. Will that be the case? I doubt it. I mean, and like as Val said, we could swap the elections, but if individuals still do not understand the importance of the election, the importance of service delivery, then
what's the point?
What is the point?
Yeah.
You know, and it's not even to be like pessimistic or anything, but genuinely people need to be educated on the importance of these things, or else like what's the point of having all of these structures and all of these big fancy words if we do not know what they actually mean? And even when we do know what they mean, how do they manifest? Like, how do they look once manifested? So, yeah, I would vote that we swap them. But we should swap them with, like, the right amount of education and force and lobbying and advocacy.
There should be a firm foundation.
Yeah, they should be, like, a solid foundation when swapping them.
And the further thing to motivate that particular idea is that I found out also recently that since we've got the two houses of the parliament, National Council and National Assembly...
People don't even know that.
Is that...
Even that, they do not know. That
I know. Is that the National Council has importance over National Assembly and who approves a law.
Yes.
So the debates can take place in National Assembly where the party leaders are.
Yeah.
But if any law needs to be made,
it goes to the National Council for review.
For review, and they have the last say before anything gets approved.
Yeah.
So even in that scenario, there is already a motivating factor that says National Council has
greater power.
Greater importance.
Yeah.
Because the council represents the various constituencies of the country versus...
And the regions.
And the regions versus the actual party leaders and their party leadership that sits in National Assembly who debates about other particular subject matters that I might not agree on. But it's not about me. So just in that particular scenario, I know, guys, I promised 30 minutes, but we've actually been going for a good 40 minutes. Just in terms of the how the turnout looked for you guys, besides the actual numbers, you know, things like was there a quick voting period for the voters to react to? The report highlights, you know, that it was not as, you know, as obviously as crowded as back in 2024 with the long lines and so on, but that the assistance was there and people could vote. So what did it look like for you guys, just for us to end on that particular note?
Yeah. Okay, I think it's bad that the voters turnout was bad, was low, but like it's good that like the old people, seeing that they were the ones that turned up the most, they didn't have to stand in those long lines. And so that kind of like is the process compared to 2024. So there was like a good aspect of the low voter turnout.
Okay.
Yeah. It was very, I just walked in. Like it was seamless. Just walk in and walk out.
It was less than 5 minutes even.
Yeah. And we also observed in Rehoboth, and that was the case. You just walk in and you walk out. I mean, there were a lot of issues that I picked up on, you know, like one of the what do they call them? presiding officers. Yeah. One of the presiding officers was like clearly from a church. Like, what is the church called? No, those church, like the churches where you wear like blue dresses, and like the white head wrap.
Yeah, I know.
And she was like in full like church gear and everything, and like greeted us as like, you know, I'm blessed and like praise the Lord and stuff, and that's great, you know. If that's the religion that you subscribe to, that's great. But that even just made me like question this entire thing of a secular state, you know, and the separation between the church and the state.
Or religion and the state.
And so it just, I mean, there were a lot of things that like I picked up on that obviously made me uncomfortable, like made me question like even the training of the presiding officers and stuff.
Mm.
But other than that, it was a very seamless process. But to go, you asked the question about like the ballot paper versus the EMV machines.
Technology wise.
Yeah. And like, I do not agree with the ballot papers. I've never had the opportunity to like vote on the machine, but even with the ballot papers, we're voting with a pencil. And even when we do civic and voter education and we tell the students that like, okay, you're going to get a ballot paper and you'll get a pencil, they're like, why am I getting a pencil? Yeah. You know, like, what if someone come and erases my first choice. And then like, the obvious response is like, oh no, but like with an ink, it will spill, and it's like it's a special kind of pencil and it's really strong and you cannot erase it without seeing, you know, like obviously those are the excuses that we give them.
Sounds like a Cambridge exam of 2002 that I took.
But it's just like, I don't think we should be voting with pencil or with ballot paper.
Yeah.
And obviously like we are smart, brilliant people in this country. We should find a way to make democracy ours and make voting ours and like unique to the Namibian condition and context.
Mm.
But as long as we keep on like buying into what we think we should be buying into and buying like, no, like no less even applying all of this Western ideas of like democracy and governance and all of that without personalizing it and understanding and making it ours, we'll constantly be lost, because there is a way. Like, who says that that is the only way that we could vote? You know, who says that there are only two options? Why can't we find an option that is unique to Namibia, that resonates with us and like allows the electorate to trust? Because a lot of vote apathy comes from a lack of trust. Like people just do not trust that anything is going to happen, and like nothing good is going to come from it.
True.
So I
it's 100%. On your side, Valentina, if you still have anything last to add that I might not have asked, and then I'll ask you as well again also.
I think the important part of something that the listener can get away with is the fact that it's a cycle.
Mm.
We should not have to end the conversation here regarding elections or just bring it up when we are a couple of months away from elections. It should be something that we should continue having, I don't know, daily conversation or something. I think it would just also capacitate us with the knowledge on the importance of elections. We shouldn't take it as some form of ritual that should be done every 5 years.
Even though it has a ritual element.
That's because we have lost the importance of it in the first place. So if we, like Jacinta said, if you have to start to personalize it, then maybe we'll go somewhere.
And on your side, Jacinta, any last words regarding sort of like looking at this discussion? Something I might not have asked as well.
No, I think it's just that. I think that, like, genuinely for democracy and for governance to work in Namibia, but in Africa, like, at large, we genuinely need to go back to the drawing board and understand what do all of these concepts mean to us and how do we make them ours. Because as long as you are borrowing and you're just, like, aimlessly borrowing, you don't even care. Then
you're aiming to tick a box.
Yeah, you're just ticking some type of checklist. Mm. Then it's never going to work, unfortunately. So we genuinely need to reframe and think long and hard about, like, what do we see the future of this country like to look like? Like, what does that look like? And how do we move towards a Namibia that is that?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we personalize these things and like make them ours? Because people are so disconnected, they could really care less.
Mm-hmm.
And on the topic of like regional and local authority elections, how do we address all of these critical things that like our nation is going through. You know, people do not have bread to eat. School just started. A lot of students do not have stationery. They don't even know which school they're going to go to. We do not even have schools to start up with. Like, we have so many issues that we need to tackle. And so how do we do that so that we can give each other a dignified living experience and not just be doing things to tick off a list? Like, can we treat each other like...
Because we are scared of sanctions.
You know, because we are scared of sanctions instead of like, I want to treat you like the god that you're out to be treated as. So.
I don't think we're on the level of Iran now. No. Just to let you know. But yeah.
Let's not push it.
But obviously, since Namibia, we still have to see what 2026 obviously has in store for Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily, to stay away from discussions of lawmaking and the likes. So we obviously have to wait now for the next 5-year cycle. Just to like to thank you guys again for taking the time to talk to our listeners, to me as well. It's first time. Thank you, Jacinta.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you once again, Valentina. Obviously, we'll make a plan, you know, to talk again
on
another subject, not elections. But yeah, thank you once again.
Yeah, thank you. This was nice.
Yeah, this was nice. Thank you for having me.
And coming back, dear listeners, from that engagement just cited there for you in terms of taking an in-depth particular look in a conversation that has had a bit of a disappointing flavor. I say flavor primarily because we all saw it. For those of us that did, you know, spend the time to get up and go and inspect our local polling station and primarily try to influence the service provision within your constituency or your local authority. And the, you know, just the overall, you know, poor turnout and poor performance primarily from the fellow voters and electorate out there. Now, at the heart, obviously, of the economic development that we wish to achieve, there have been a few particular concerns. Now, I don't know every political, you know, or politician out there or councillor. I don't know them personally. They would not know me. I cannot have a say primarily about their, you know, their character or the particular points that they stick to. However, there had been serious concerns regarding the campaigning, specifically for electorates. Now, when I say serious concerns, in my specific constituency, there were only 3 candidates. And none of them were my first options. I was even scolded by another particular civil society representative who asked me, why did I go play eeny, meeny, miny, moe with the candidates at the ballot box or at the, you know, literally at the ballot. And I told her because my first, I don't know any of these candidates and none of them campaigned or canvassed for my vote. So I don't know what I'm voting for. I don't know who I'm voting for. Even though I see the names and the faces, I do not know what they stand for. I do not know what they have been trying to achieve specifically, was trying to either improve service delivery or even try to, you know, tackle a particular issue. You don't know what they were standing for. And if you had to go and ask specifically any person out there, even yourself, go and ask yourself, just for those of us that voted, just go ask yourself, what did you vote for in 2025? Don't worry. I know, and I have a particular strong confidence about this, is that not many of you probably know why you went and voted. Not many of you know why you voted. We had the manifesto issue back in 2024, back in 2025. We didn't know who many of these candidates were, what these candidates stood for, what they were trying to achieve or trying to do. I mean, back in last year in 2025, for the first time I heard in the United States, for example, they had something like town hall meetings where the senators and congresspeople had the opportunity of coming back from the National Assembly, what we call National Assembly, from their Congress and their Senate, which would be their lower house, and they go and meet their constituents and talk about the national issues that their U.S. president was busy enacting and was causing a lot of consternation in their communities. But I'll tell you today, guys, I know that you know that none of us knew what many of these particular councils and candidates that that were voted for, what they stood for. None of us know or knew or have an inkling of an idea of what these people have stood for. I say what these people, and I use that phrase very liberally, because primarily this was, you know, worse than any particular corruption activity out there. However, I do see the phone line flashing. Just hold on for me, dear caller, specifically.
Rande so levuli mponga sana. Pora keneni matungi mwa Namibia mwana mkunda doko mambo. Elie divi so lomuli oktundira kwa ministeri unandima, marunonege mefuta, memane wapo kororevu. Pora keneni na wano kulitamba ya kambudiezi kumonoane koroveni, kama parambo na waka umi. Hagekeni suruga na sokurandesa nokuranda evuli mponga sana. Moro asinge, moro evuli mponga sana mwa Namibia evuli pangero, kani kwa tokulirandesa mwankedi nkeni. Kulihame sila masuruga na sokurandesa ndi kuranda evu, kapi ya polisira. Weta ze wapo kurevu ndio mkunda ezivana kutumburasi 8 number 5 of 2002 kwa silika hivi ya ukayangosna. Matenge kogo iruga na vapira polisira ya rande suevu. Matenge kogo paveta. Vadonga nesiveta angava futisa taningava za modorongo. Hedonga neso ndio mpora mkunda. Rande so ndiye randoevu kuvura kulete sapo mapiro kulizuva ndi marwa nambo mwono mkunda deti. Yinke yono hepa kudiva. Evuli mponga sana ula natuwenye. Halioru none rokuli gavera, ornatu guwane namo natuwenye mawa. Tupungure ni upingwa wetu, kukufuma deka evuli mponga sana, ose kufuma deka mulio kono mpo detu, kani kupopera nkara pamozitu. Rapotai via ukayapira kupulisira. Msene sowe kuna kugaza rasi, kuna karapo, hiruga na irande soevu, hirapota kundango zorudi, ndango zevulo mponga sano, ndiko mbere wazo ministeri, hoza karara pepi nevango lyogi. Turuga nini kumwe, tukungeru none revule tulo mponga sano, tulikungire mhoko kukomeni. Uministeri kapna ukakara na unzoni, sena na kazumba nesa marunone gevu, mora hiruga na dona irande soevulo mponga sano. Diorokasi, evulo mponga sano mulio unini, tulipo pere nino kulipungwira na veni. Mpandu keruga neno kumi. Edivi sweli, lioko radio, kunali tulisa apone kwato sokole pasi maliwa tunde la kepangero losuro ngosa Namibia, tanye pangero la Germany, Peter Amo, German Development Bank. Mwagwana kwa mapuku rogomanzi, guwanekirano mbele wazo ministeri za karara pepi, ni wango lioge, ndiko mbele wazo inka yonkara pamwe, mo ministeri unandima, marunonege mefuta, memane wapo koroevu, kono moraezi. Euta ntazimwe zimwe, mbali euta ntantatu, tambali ntazimwe euta nwe.
Now, coming back there from the ad break right there, and as promised, we'll quickly get into the phone lines. Eagle FM, good afternoon.
Oh, George.
Yes, Uncle Bona. Sorry about the long ad. It also crept up on me.
Don't worry, it's part of our service.
Yeah.
Part of the service delivery. We stopped with service delivery.
Mm.
Because when they are doing that, it generates income, isn't it?
Of course it does, Uncle Bona. Of course it does, yeah.
So when it comes accidentally or whatever, it's in order.
Mm.
So otherwise, how are you?
I'm all right, and you, Uncle Bona?
Yeah, I was listening to your conversation with your the madam.
Mm.
And it's very insightful, you know, very insightful indeed, and meaningful. So the service delivery, like you mentioned about the railroad and many other towns, issues of that nature are really happening. And I sometimes also question the roles of the political leader, the political party and leadership toward the community upliftment.
Yeah.
Sometimes you see, like the robot that you were mentioning about, I was watching on the TV where they are talking about issues of drugs.
Yeah.
Issues of what?
Uncle Bona, it's actually a good thing you bring up that point. it's actually good that you bring up. Angubona, you would not believe me. Since 1999, when my mother moved us out of that town back to Windhoek, obviously, you know, because firstly, she was worried about, you know, the safety of us, her children. And all that. But the town back then had a very safe element also because there were a lot of, working households, meaning mothers and fathers, both parents working. And there was this vibrant demographic culture specifically of, yes, children could walk safely. And there was not this thing of drug abuse was not even there. However, Angabona, you will not believe me if I tell you that the police station in Rehoboth is the same size since when I left it in 1999 as a 15-year-old boy. It still has the same contingent possibly of police officers, meaning the same tally. The hospital, the clinic, all those particular services are still the same size, contained in the same physical infrastructure versus the whole town that has grown so far.
Imagine.
And so big, because there's so many people now that commute between Windhoek and Rehoboth. The question has to be asked. In even the local authority, Angubona, the building, the itself, still the same size. And no one is looking at, this is one of those towns in Namibia that is growing at a rapid rate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Angubona, here's the thing. If you see that your town, wherever you are, the village, whatever, is growing so big because the human, the rural to urban migration is very strong, should the councillors not know or have at the forefront of their campaigning when they're canvassing for votes wherever in Namibia, you know what? I will try to put in a motion to enlarge the clinic.
Yeah.
So that we talk to the regional council so that they give more funding to enlarge the clinic or to enlarge that school or to bring a police station to us because we are more people living here and safety and security will become an issue.
Yeah.
Are those not the things that they're supposed to be campaigning on, Angubona?
Yeah.
Because
the issue, you see, you just mentioned the thing. I used to listen to Angle Paul. Those years, there was a man of dignity who used to come here and stage, talk about issues, national issues. Whenever he's talking about issues of issues of even the people to construction, the technical know-how.
Yeah.
He always refer to people from Rehoboth. And I remember very well when I was living in Grasbrook. Those years. Grasbrook and Komasdal and Agustinum, you know, this area there. Very close to each other. And then I discovered that as time goes on, you know, people were also migrating from Rehoboth. Rehoboth was a good town by then. And these are issues that need to be addressed. I don't know whether now that has to be blamed on the political party or maybe our self-individual. And I think the language of alcohol and all these other things and drugs and things like that, maybe they were there, but they were perhaps not as much as they are now. But what I'm saying, now I'm listening from what you are saying, all those things are still the same.
Yeah.
All those things are still the same.
Yeah.
When are they going to be uplifted or improved and things like that?
Yeah.
Is it because of the political parties?
Angubona, I'm
here. Let me call you because somebody needs my services.
Not a problem, Angubona.
Yes.
So, obviously, having a look at that discussion, dear listeners, we sit with a particular conundrum. But before we continue, we're quickly going to take a short break and we're going to come back after this.
T
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
So quickly coming back to listeners, let's take the next caller. Eagle FM, good afternoon.
So let me then conclude.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
Yeah, so those the people from the robot, they were so trained when it came to construction, when it came to technical knowledge from VTC and all these things. And then we were, like I said, this man who used to talk about you, how people can really be made use of. And he was always mentioning that to those other area. And we know from the previous Bantu education how that area was somehow so advantaged. So this time around, maybe it needs to be, it's maybe the political party role. It's not forthcoming there. And I don't know, you know, sometimes I don't follow who is now leading there as a political figure, which part, which political party is there. You know, I really don't follow because I'm also concerned with the social and economic development. So whoever is there and is neglecting that those responsibility, I think it needs to be looked at. So like I said, the delay or deprivation of service must be looked at so that we can see how we can iron out some of those things.
It's a good point, Angabona. I will not argue against it, but I do have reservations, like the reservations I held with the two guests in terms of should the responsibility of voter education and voter motivation not be on the parties. Because they want the votes. It's not easy and that wants the votes. The parties want the votes. But it's a good point you're making, Angabona.
So please, let's see if that is the case. Can we then call them to account?
I also believe that. I also believe in that.
Done properly, not necessarily just to go there and win votes. Voting, because you can manipulate the people. You can manipulate them and influence them negatively or whatever to get you, but in terms of service delivery, one need to be very serious on that one. Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity.
Not a problem, Angabandria. Thanks a lot. So on that particular note, dear listeners, we're about a minute and a half out from the end for today's discussion. It's one or two questions. It's one question. It's actually two questions. That you've got to ask yourself, primarily in looking at the importance of our election cycles. Firstly, if you sit with the realization, if you firstly ask, why does it take so long for ministries to enact the actual development on the ground, and you come up against the other, the answer that, that, you know, that, or the response to that question being that, well, you need regional and local authorities who have to be the implementers, the builders, the installers, the dispensers of service and the development budget and XYZ discussions, then you sit with the key conclusion of, should that not be the elections that actually should be of worth, of note? Primarily because, should we not first vote for the National Council and for the regional councils and for the local authorities first, before we've got all this fanfare and, you know, particular excitement around voting for a new president every 5 years? It's a question. It's an idea. Think about it. Mull about it. ask yourself and dissect some of the particular points that we've highlighted in the conversation you would have heard. But it is essential in understanding what are you actually voting for in both cycles, in presidential and the local and regional authority one. On that particular note, dear listeners, okay, actually, I still have one more point before I say my goodbye. One more point. One more. Also think about this particular scenario regarding who are you voting for? You knew about the campaigning for the political parties and for their presidential aspirations. But here's the big question you've got to ask yourself. On the local authority front, who has to bring you housing? Who has to bring you water and electricity? Who has to take away or drive away your refuse and install infrastructure for your sewage to flow from your property to where it needs to go? Who has to do all that investment? The most micro of representation of the state, that being the local authority. And who has to look after the developmental needs where you live? The regional and the local authority. So why then are we playing back? Why are we putting the cart in front of the donkey or the cow or the horse? And we're not looking at who actually needs to be doing the work. And not investing the energy and the time in the correct manner at where the donkey, the horse or the ox is positioned. Because they are the ones pulling the cart. Why are we worried about who's going to be the minister of what ministry if that minister is but just strong or has strength on paper? Remember the most pivotal question that we always ask you in the home run, specifically if you've got to look at politics and you hear a politician say, I'm going to bring you jobs. The first question you got to ask that politician back is, how are you going to do that? Now, on that note, dear listeners, I've taken the extra 2 minutes that I've, taken from David. I apologize, David. But on that note, let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow, here on The Home Run. And this, obviously, is what we always do here on your number one Eagle FM, your number one talk station, that being Eagle FM. Enjoy the rest of your programming in our company. We'll see each other again, same time, same place.